Good morning, everyone. I'm R.W. Estella with a word in Edgewise. Today, on this 70th day of 2019, we can't help but see that this year is well underway, leaving us 295 days until 2020. By now, most of us have sprung ahead to accommodate this year's rendition of daylight savings time, of course, having sacrificed an hour to do so. Many among us have our own valid opinions regarding the lunacy of our yearly shuffling to fall back and spring ahead to create the illusion of something useful insofar as our relation with time and space, so I will leave each to his or her own views about daylight savings time. This past Thursday, a flight to Hampden Field near Northampton, New Hampshire and back allowed me to contemplate the advantages daily afforded us given a modest helping of space and time. On a southwest heading from DeWitt Field in Old Town, Maine, my 71-year-old Cessna 140 worked hard to plow through a 20-knot quartering headwind at 2,000 feet above ground level. Slight changes in altitude helped occasionally, but the GPS only occasionally registered an average ground speed in the 80s and 90s. In other words, many vehicles a couple of thousand feet below me on the interstate were moving at least as fast. That didn't really bother me, though, because they were not being offered the view that I had. One that inevitably led me to thinking about how close to the edge of the Atlantic Ocean so many Maine residents live. Curiously, I flashed to the 401st anniversary of German astronomer Johannes Kepler composing his third law of planetary motion, which holds that the square of the orbital period of a planet is directly proportional to the cube of the semi-axis of its orbit. In layperson's lingo, we are talking about capturing the relationship between the distance of planets from the Sun and their orbital periods. Space and time, we might say. This past weekend, 54 years ago, the United States landed its first combat troops in South Vietnam as 3,500 Marines arrived to defend the U.S. airbase at Da Nang. Some of us remember that day from 1965 because it would mark the beginning of a struggle that became increasingly intense as the Vietnam War escalated. That struggle was between those who believed in conducting the war and those who did not. Eventually, in 1975, 10 years after the first major U.S. combat contingent entered Vietnam, the last remaining U.S. forces stationed at the U.S. Embassy would leave as Saigon fell to invading North Vietnamese troops. On a different but related front, that same year, this past weekend, marked the first celebration of International Women's Day. This week, when the heavens present themselves, watch for our waxing crescent moon sweeping to the south of the red planet Mars in the western sky. Along the way, as the moon continues to travel eastward, it will wander into the constellation Taurus the Bull, swing to the south of the Pleiades star cluster, and then to the north to the red star Aldebaran. Today is the birthday of media mogul Rupert Murdoch, born in Melbourne, Australia in 1931 as the Great Depression was underway worldwide. Rupert's father, Sir Keith Murdoch, had been a prominent World War I correspondent and was a prominent publisher, heading the Melbourne Herald, a position which Rupert would inherit after attending Oxford, where his father had sent Rupert to study political science and economics. The young Murdoch began changing the editorial policies of the papers, embracing lurid headlines and sensational stories, and incorporating as much sex as possible. By 1968, he was worth at least $50 million and returned to England to buy London's News of the World and The Sun. He would then double The Sun's circulation with such novelties as the daily Page Three Girl, a topless beauty. Soon came an Atlantic crossing and the subsequent purchase of the New York Post, New York Magazine, the Village Voice, TV Guide, and 17. He also diversified his portfolio by purchasing Fox Studios, eventually wresting the rights to NFL football from CBS and persuading several NBC affiliates to switch to his station. Unembarrassed by his tactics, Rupert has this to say, quote, "A press that fails to interest the whole community is one that will ultimately become a house organ of the elite, engaged in an increasingly private conversation with a dwindling club," close quote. Murdoch was born while the world at large was in a great fomenting phase, a time of myriad monumental changes, financially, politically, technologically. We often forget, for example, that while the United States was suffering through the Great Depression, it was also in the midst of what would become known as the Golden Age of Aviation, when much of the technology emerging then became the foundation of today's aviation technology. As 2019 began, the Consumer Electronics Show was held in Las Vegas, Nevada, and traffic-hopping eVTOLs, or environmentally conscious vertical takeoff and landing air taxis, were all the rage. And perhaps the biggest impression is being made by the Bell Nexus hybrid electric five-seater, built by the same company, Bell Helicopter, that brought us the UH-1, or Huey of Vietnam fame, and the Bell Jet Ranger, used by organizations around the planet, including Maine Forestry. As a hybrid electric five-seater, the Bell Nexus eVTOL is the most radical of air taxis yet, featuring six large tilting fans that will allow it to take off and land vertically and fly up to 150 miles at 150 miles per hour. Picture, however, this. Think the film Blade Runner and the plethora of urban air traffic vehicles operating in a dismal atmospheric realm due to the effects of climate change. All of this flashed through my mind while flying over the Maine coastline, seeing the dense housing at the shoreline, wondering about sea level rise. But larger issues surfaced after I had landed, as my wife reported she had failed to escape one of the monster potholes of our local roadways, and now had an appointment to have the damage to the undercarriage inspected. And our fingers are crossed. From Orono, Maine, here's to a great day.